football on off the ball.
They can no longer dominate the ball, and the fear factor from City is gone, but they'll still finish second or third.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
All right, I'm delighted to say Stephen Smith of Kitman Labs is back with us. I don't know when the last time you were in with us, but it could be half a decade, a decade.
It is 5 years ago.
Yeah. Well, things have changed since then. Business is booming, it's fair to say. Your company started, I think we'll do a quick potted history of this to bring everybody up to speed. You worked in the staff at Leinster and felt like there was a better way to treat injuries and to get players fit and ready to go. And from there, you built, it's fair to say, one of the most interesting data companies at the bleeding edge of getting player performance to be as good as it possibly can be, to the point where you're now working with the NFL, the Premier League, and some other interesting leagues. I've missed out a lot of detail there, but that's like the elevator pitch.
I think you've done a great summary. Yeah, I don't know, my goosebumps on my arm hearing you say it. I forget about it sometimes, how much it's come along and how far we've grown. But yeah, it's been a pretty incredible journey to date, and it's been a whole lot of fun as well.
So you have an Irish office and an American office, at the very least, that I know of. Are there may well be others.
Yeah, we've a UK set up as well, and then we've staff kind of now since COVID based remotely in South America. We've some in Japan, some in Australia, and some scattered all over Spain and parts of Southern Europe as well.
So what do you do?
so we provide a technology and data analytics platform for high performance organizations to help them with a myriad of different use cases. So everything from talent identification through to talent development through to performance optimization and health optimization. So how do they find the best players? How do they build the best players? How do they keep them healthy? How do they keep them performing well?
Is it fair to say that it did start out in the kind of health, you want the players to, because that's your background, right?
Yeah.
You want the players to be fit, to be on the field for the game time as much as possible, and everything else has kind of followed from that.
Yeah, so I suppose it started from that thirst for data and information and insights, and to really understand how do we objectively make better decisions about how we manage our athletes day to day. So, you know, coming from a practitioner background, working in sports medicine and strength conditioning, you know, we were very frustrated by the lack of ability to be able to say, which treatment techniques are best? What are the best exercises to use and leverage? How do we manage the training load of our athletes? How do we help them to recover better? Like, what are the exact numbers and data points that we should leverage for that? And the more we got into it, the more we realized, well, you need everything in there. You can't understand how to manage somebody's training load if you don't understand, well, what's needed from them in the next game? What's the demands from them in the game? And what do they need to be capable of doing in a game? You know, and then to be able to look at that, you need to understand, well, how does their physicality relate to it? And how does, you know, their injury history, and how does their current fitness levels, and how does their recovery levels? And it just becomes, you know, very quickly, you start to basically try and complete this 360 degree view of the athlete to be able to make that decision. And now all of a sudden you have coaching information in there, you have performance information in there, you have fitness information, you have growth and development information, et cetera. And it kind of mushroomed into something much bigger.
Yeah, because the coaching aspect of it is obviously hugely important. We were just chatting outside earlier. You were making the point that if you have a picture of a player, and as they develop and evolve, if you can compare what the coaching is saying they're capable of doing with what the match performance is, then you get rid of that whole that cliche of train like Tarzan, play like Jane. It's like, well, what's happening here? Why are players not performing in the match scenario the same way as they're actually training?
Absolutely. And at the end of the day as well, right, everybody, you know, coming from a fitness and medical background, you know, everybody wants to think that they play a really important role. But at the end of the day, right, it's not most of these, you know, whether it's the NFL this weekend, whether it's, you know, whether it's football or rugby or Gaelic football, it's not, we're not going out to test and see who's the fittest. We're going out to test to see who's the best, right? Who can perform the best? Who has the best tactics? Who have the best strategy? Who has the best technical and tactical execution? So the coaching and the game plan and the strategy is the goal, right? And everything else should lead up to that, should ladder into it. We should understand how do these things help that endpoint and that goal. That's because that's what it's all about. Performance is the ultimate.
At one point, I think maybe the last time we were talking, I was wondering if maybe you were going to end up being a consumer-facing brand because of all the data and information you had. But you've definitely gone the opposite direction so far anyway, in that you're partnering with the NFL and the Premier League at like a very, very high level. Can you talk to us a bit about that and how you can actually partner with a massive organization like the Premier League and what that partnership gives you access to and how you help them?
Yeah, I mean, I think what ultimately when you think of these organizations, everybody thinks that they're rights holders and they own a competition. I think the vast majority of sports leagues traditionally over the last 10 years, that's the way they've thought about themselves. And when you speak about people like the Premier League, people like the NFL, the NBA, Major League Soccer, etc., they've realized that actually they're not just rights holders, right? That's a core element of what they do is organizing the competition. But actually, if the competition is not exciting, if it's not incredibly competitive, if every game that gets showed over a weekend, if the fans showing up at that game don't believe that their team can win, no one cares. And if nobody cares, we have no ticket sales, we have no merchandise sales, we have no broadcast rights, and the entire economic kind of model around sport falls down. And we're seeing that all over the globe today. So what's been really interesting for me to see over the last 10 years is working with some of these leagues to see that they care about the talent more than anybody else realizes. And they actually realize that the heartbeat of their entire business model is talent. And that is why when we look at somebody like the Premier League, they have made a bigger investment than any other sports league in the world in talent development. And it's also why, you know, they've come from not being the biggest football league in the world to being the biggest football league in the world in a very, very short period of time. And not only are they the biggest, they're actually the biggest by a multiple. And their product is so good that they generate more revenue internationally than they do domestically. That's mind-blowing. There is no other sports league in the world generate more money in other countries than they do in their own.
There's a really important part of this that I think that I certainly did not know and didn't understand. My immediate instinct was that the clubs would be professionally cautious about sharing information with the central league body, in this case the Premier League. Like if I'm Man City and I'm developing my players with Brian Barry Murphy on the other day, he used to be the head of their academy, I assume they're incredibly protective over their data and information because it feels like it's their intellectual property. Mm-hmm. But you were saying it's not the case, that actually they're mandated to share data and information.
Yeah, so the Premier League changed their rules and their structure and their governance model just over 10 years ago, maybe 12 years ago now. And they introduced what's called the ECPP, or the Elite Player Performance Pathway. And what they've done with that is that they have mandated a specific set of standards across everything from for the development of an athlete. So everything from tactical data, technical data, physical information, medical information, and performance information, they mandate that these are the minimum standards that you have to perform. These are things that you have to do to be able to bring through and develop talent that's high quality enough to be able to keep lifting the Premier League up and make it better and better and better. And as part of that, if you don't comply with those rules, well, the broadcast rights fees don't drip down to you in the way they're supposed to. So, and it's a really smart model, right? It's not like some people, I think, probably initially were like, this is a Big Brother mentality. But actually, it's not, right? What they don't want to happen is what we're seeing, we've seen happen in La Liga, in Serie A, like even in places like the Bundesliga. Of the last 16 seasons in the Bundesliga, there's been only 2 winners. And 15 of those trophies were won by one team. That is not exciting because there is one team or 2 teams over there that have figured out how to put the right structures in place to develop high quality talent, but the rest of the clubs are just a mile behind. The gulf is so wide that it actually erodes the quality of the competition and then it pulls down the entire business model. And the Premier League figured that out and said, you know what, a rising tide raises all boats. Let's actually ensure that everybody does this. And, you know, maybe some of the clubs at the start were, you know, probably cautious about that. But the reality is they're all profiting off that today. And I think they've invested across the Premier League and EFL, they've invested £2 million in the last 10 years in talent, just purely into talent development. But they've actually capitalized on player sales that equates to more than double that. And that's just the players they've sold.
It's billions, sorry.
Billions.
Billion, yeah.
Billion, yeah. And that's just the players that have been sold. Think about the players that actually are still, that have come through that model and are sitting on the balance sheet that those clubs playing, driving the quality of competition that we see every weekend. Like, that investment has just been absolutely incredible, not just for the quality of the product, but actually for the entire business model of the Premier League.
And so what role does Kitman play in that?
So we provide the technology essentially to implement those rules and to allow the teams to be compliant with that and to collect all of the relevant data across all aspects of that kind of development phase for the athletes. So incredible, you know, I think, place to be. And it's just such a fun and interesting project to work alongside as well, because, you know, we're supporting not just the top 20 Premier League clubs. This is a mandate across the entirety of UK football. So it's all of the EFL clubs as well. So we have 92 academy systems leveraging the technology, feeding this information in. And it's just been really interesting, like the hunger and appetite at the Premier League of their staff to understand what does the information mean? How can they improve their talent development structures? How can they improve like all aspects of how they build better talent and keep building that product? It's just it's just been really, really kind of enriching to be involved in that process.
I guess it's a very competitive sphere, but having the advantage of being involved with the Premier League teams means that it's very difficult for anybody else to come in and be your competitor in the space at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't stop people, right? like any market, right? There's plenty of people trying to, you know, trying to do aspects of what we're doing. And, you know, I think we, like any sports team, right? You don't spend your entire life thinking about what the opposition are doing, right? You focus on building your game plan and deploying that. And when you go into battle, then, you know, if you're hoping that you've outsmarted the competition. So I think we take exactly the same approach internally. And, you know, we have a lot of belief in the expertise that we have.
And as a matter of interest, the information that you're getting from the 92 academies, is it randomized? Is it anonymized? Or are you able to, do they give you the details of the individuals as you go along to... If it's an auditing piece of software, obviously it has one function for the Premier League, but from the club's perspective, they obviously want the individual data collected and maintained and
yeah, so at a club level, they can see obviously all of their information. They can't see anybody else's. So right. you can't, as a staff member at one club, you can't look in and see someone else's. But they can, there's certain aspects of the data that they can basically, they can benchmark data across the entire pool. So they know how are they faring in certain areas and how does that look across the entirety of the UK football kind of landscape. And that's really helpful, really valuable to understand because, you know, sometimes you get that tunnel vision of this is what I'm seeing, this is what this cohort of players look like. But to be able to then say, okay, well, how does that look? How does that look on a broader spectrum? Like that's invaluable to be able to provide that type of insight.
Is the Premier League the first place that you did this at this level?
Yeah, the Premier League is probably the first place we've done this specific, you know, aspect around talent development and helping in that, and probably. Where else would you do it, right? It's the most robust infrastructure developed globally around a model like this. So we're in a very privileged position to be able to co-develop and innovate on some of these kind of techniques, etc., alongside the best league in the world.
Yeah. I mean, it's an amazing place to start because obviously, like, where do you go after this? But you've gone to the MLS and that is obviously experiencing a period of tremendous growth at the moment as well. So there's a model that you can take from the Premier League and apply to other leagues around the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the MLS are a phenomenal organization as well. So smart and saw the writing on the wall as well. Saw what was happening with other leagues falling away. Saw how the Premier League were pulling away in one direction and very quickly have adopted an approach where instead of just being a top tier league that we hear about or see on TV, that they've built an entire ecosystem with MLS Next Pro, their semi-professional competition, into Next, which is their academy competition, and now even Next 2, which is a sub-elite academy competition. And so they have developed and invested really heavily in the concept of player pathway and how do you take, you know, people from the very, very beginning of that all the way through to professionalism. And I think the power of that in a country that has 330, 340 million people is on a different level. And we're seeing such an explosion over there. And it's coming at the same time that they're getting a huge uplift in the economic side of their business. Like they've grown their media rights and broadcast rights by over 1,000% over the last number of years. Incredible.
This couldn't be a more urgent conversation for us to be having in the context of Irish football, where we've been back and forth on the show over the last couple of years, wondering why the government has been so slow in investing in the academies. They made the academies go off, they made the FAI go off and run an audit of the current situation in Ireland. It feels like you guys could be very helpful in a scenario like that, or that player pathway, if it's working in the Premier League as a gold standard, is there something there that could work in an Irish context, for example?
Oh, well, absolutely. I think we are stuck in such a vicious cycle in Ireland in relation to the entire football model, and it all stems from that lack of that base on the pyramid. We do not have enough high quality talent coming through, and that is because there isn't a structured approach to talent development across every single one of the League of Ireland clubs today. And the League of Ireland staff, to their credit, have been banging on the table about this for years. and been saying, we need help, we need support, we need investment to put these structures in place. We need the right, we need more people, we need more we need professional coaches, we need professional medics, we need professional like sports scientists and strength and conditioning coaches. We need the technology to track these players on their pathway on the way through. We need better facilities. We need to be able to document what's happening through the pathway and understand where people are at so we can make better decisions. And ultimately, I think, to some extent, that's been looked at in Ireland as like the League of Ireland looking for a handout. And I actually think that people need to change their mindset enormously, because this is about an investment. And it's an investment that will pay off and reap dividends like it has in every other like league that has done this globally. I think the impact is not just going to be that we have a more like a better competition in the League of Ireland. We're going to have a national team that doesn't show up and have the results that we've had recently, which is really, really depressing for anybody involved in or interested in sport in Ireland. But also, we're going to have an economic model where we have people that are excited to come and watch these games, are passionate about it. We're going to have broadcasters that care about it and want to spend on it. We're going to have sponsors that want their name on the jersey of these teams. We're going to have people that want to go to the shop and like buy those jerseys and pull them over their head. And I think that like that's and we're going to have transfer revenue that can keep feeding the system. Like you look at Evan Ferguson selling for €60,000 out of the League of Ireland system, and then he goes off and he's worth €30 million now off the AS Roma. Like we're actually leaving money on the table because like we're being short-sighted and not being willing to invest in the structure that's needed to support every aspect of performance here.
One of the knocks that people have at the moment is that if we give the money to the FAI, we won't be able to track the value of that investment over a period of time. But it sounds like what you're saying is that actually it's very easy to track, that now we have the tools to do that.
Absolutely. I mean, that's exactly what the Premier League do. And they actually just published a report over the last 18 months as well to actually prove the value of the investment and the return on investment across a variety of different indexes from the first 10 years of their investment. And, you know, I think they, as I said already, they've invested over £2 billion, and actually they've brought in over £4 billion in terms of transfer fees. So, like, if we need any proof that actually this is a solid investment, and I don't think the League of Ireland are looking for £2 billion, right? They're looking for a very modest amount of money to be able to actually start putting the right structures in place.
You started out in rugby. Has rugby embraced the revolution and all this stuff as fast as it might have done? Or is there one of these sports that's actually better than the others, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question. Often we talk about this internally. I think every sport is probably strong in specific areas. And they're strong in specific areas because that's what their business model calls for. And so I think, you know, where the NFL has done, you know, they're probably the world leaders in player health and safety, because 10 years ago they ran into an issue where you know, player health and safety was being called into question, and it was questioning the viability of their sport. And they decided, hey, we're not going to bury our head in their sand. We're going to be the world leaders in how we understand player health. And we're going to introduce initiatives to improve player health. And we're going to be at the cutting edge on that. And I think they've made over 30 rule changes to their game over the last number of years based on evidence to improve player health and safety. Like, there's no other sport has done that. Then you look at the Premier League and they realize that their business model is built around talent. So they've invested in talent development. So they're the best in the world at that. So I think, you know, every league, you know, starts to look at it, or sport looks at that and tries to figure out where, you know, where is their niche and how does that drive their business model.
Yeah, rugby seems a bit stuck at the moment. They can't organise the global calendar properly. They tried, and now we're going to have next season the new World League, which is actually going to remove the Rugby Championship, which has just reached a weird peak where all four teams are actually capable of winning it. So I don't know.
I mean, it does seem like it's in an interesting place. And I thought the Rugby Championship this year was exceptional, actually. I thought the impact that Joe, my old boss from Leinster, has had at down in Australia has just been night and day. And it's so exciting to see what he did with that team. And then Felipe, who also worked with Argentina, and what he's done with that team, to be able to watch those games and see that any of those four teams could have walked away with that trophy at the end was really exciting. But yeah, would love to see, I think, more from, especially now living in America so long. I miss rugby, right? And I miss we don't get the TV exposure for it. The game hasn't grown the way that other sports have grown. Like, look at what's happening this weekend here with the NFL. Look at what Dublin looks like. When I got off the plane in Dublin Airport and walked through, and there's marching bands and there's cheerleaders walking through the airport, and you come downtown and it's a sea of purple and yellow. Like, we're missing something in rugby today because we have a fabulous game and an incredible product and we don't yet know how to scale it.
Yeah, it feels like the NFL have realized that Europe is ripe for their marketing, and it will be interesting to see what their reaction is like from rugby. Is football actually an easier sport for you to build those pathways out than rugby, for example? Obviously, from a scale perspective, it makes way more sense. But is rugby actually so complex in that the role from 1 to 8 is so different?
No, not at all. I mean, because when you get into a football team, an elite level football team, they'll tell you that like the difference between like a striker and a midfielder and you know a left back or a sweeper, etc. Like they're all completely different too. Like they're just metrics, right? That's just hey, these are the qualities that we want from like a high performance output in a game from this position. We don't really, you know, I shouldn't say we don't care, but it doesn't matter to us what those metrics are. Each club is going to have their own philosophy, their own style, their own strategy, what that should look like. And so then whether they choose one set of metrics or a different set of metrics, that shouldn't influence it. Our job is to come in and support that and provide the technology that helps them to understand that and interpret that and collect that information and make the right decision. So, and you know, personally, obviously, I'm very passionate about rugby, given that it wasn't my background, and would just love to see more, you know, would love to see the growth of the game more, would love to see it, you know, selfishly, given that I live in America now, would love to see the game come in there, because I think the American sports fan, given how exciting American football is for them, there's stoppages, you know, you've different teams on either side. Now, I know it's part of their culture and DNA, but when any of my friends have had exposure to rugby and they see the game doesn't stop like that and these guys play, as they call it, both sides of the ball, and they're not wearing a helmet and they're not wearing the pads, they're like, it's a very visceral game to watch. Like, the American fan looks at it and goes, wow, that is crazy. And as soon as they start to understand it, they understand that, oh, it's not just 15 guys like running into each other, it's actually very smart and there's a lot of tactics and strategy. Like, if we can tell those stories, if we can, you know, leverage, I think, the insights or the approaches that some of these other leagues have taken to grow their games internationally as well, there's an opportunity for rugby to do the same.
So what's next from the company's perspective?
Yeah, just continue to do more, right? I think we've invested really, really heavily over the last number of years in our medical solutions to be able to support the types of innovation of people like the NFL, et cetera. We've invested hugely in our talent development and our league operations capabilities to support people like the Premier League and Major League Soccer. And I think for us, the next number of years is really capitalizing on that investment, scaling that, bringing it to more leagues, bringing it to more federations, and helping to grow their games, helping to grow these leagues, helping to grow the games, helping to unlock, you know, new levels of performance across, you know, sporting bodies all over the world. And that's what gets us excited, right? That's what makes me, you know, that's what makes me tingle.
And at a club level, for example, what are the metrics that you're actually, what are you measuring?
Yeah, how long do we have? It's everything from like what are the physical outputs that are being placed on athletes to the performance outputs in terms of what's happening in game, to how they're recovering and how they show up at the training field week in, week out, to the injuries and illnesses that they're having, to, you know, physical intakes and screenings before they sign a player and the evaluations that are happening there, to even, you know, scouting reports and what people are thinking about athletes before they arrive in.
So it's trying to take all those data points and put them in one place.
In one, and then not just bring it together, right? That's one. It's always the first thing that people are like, we need all this information together. But if you ask somebody, well, why? Why do you need it together? Need it together because they're trying to understand what it means, right? Yeah. It's about building that insight. It's about connecting the dots and creating that value by helping people understand, what does this information mean? It's all about intelligence.
That's difficult for a lot of coaches, right? Who are like, but my belly tells me he's no good. And everybody's like, well, you know, or my belly tells me he's amazing. And actually there's bits. So I presume more coaches are more open to this now than previously.
Oh, absolutely.
But teaching them to interpret the data must also be part of the role.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not even the coaches, right? I think people are quick to give coaches a bad name about being old school, right? Most coaches understand, right? And they maybe can't quantify things in numbers, but they are experts of their game, right? And they're able to read their game and see it. So their intuition and their instincts are often right, but what they can't do is quantify why it's right. And I think we, as support staff, whether we're fitness staff members, medics, scientists, analysts, you know, video people, I think oftentimes those support areas, and I would say like us, I'm going to use the collective us because that's the role that I played, haven't been good enough at translating that information into the language of the coach.
Right.
And I think it's on us, right? The coach has enough on their plate. They understand the game. They're experts in the game. We have to do a better job of understanding them and understanding what are they trying to achieve on the field and how do I give this information back to them in ways that relate back to the things that they care about. And if we can do that, so that's a part of the role, is helping people to create that narrative with the information so that it's heard.
How many staff have you got now?
About 150.
Right. Wow, that's mad. Congratulations, it's great, and it's always fascinating to talk to you, because it feels like, it certainly feels like we're on the verge of something big in Irish football if we can get that investment that's coming, and it's great to hear that an Irish company is at the forefront of this and might be able to, at some point, if the government put the money in, have a template there that we can access. So, continued success. Thanks a million for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much. Really enjoyed it.